be a part of the oceans and sky. When I was young, before my life, I was a part of the oceans and sky.
Welcome back to this Sheep Fan Meet the Flockers presentation from Brave New World Order series. This is episode 3, and we're calling this The Doors of Deception. In this episode, we're going to be looking into the 60s band and two of the band members of The Doors. The whole Doors story, as like we've seen in this series so far, a kind of stage-constructed event feel to it. And sadly, we've all fallen for the fairy tale. Many times over. So far, this Brave New World Order series has shown the clear connection between mind control operations and popular culture that also link back to the Huxley family and dark occultists, etc., etc. Before we start, I will apologise to all Doors fans. The information you're about to hear in this presentation may, nor should, change your mind about your favourite band and its band members. I'm not a Doors fan. Christian's not a Doors fan, but they became part of this Huxley Brave New World Order series because they were called after Huxley's book, The Doors of Perception. Personally, I find their music quite depressing and boring and repetitive from the songs that I've heard, and I've tried listening to them as well. Have you, Chris?
I don't actually know any of the songs. All I can think of is the one from Lost Boys, People Are Strange When We're Strange, that one. And Walking Through to the Other Side. I can't actually name another one, actually. Do you know any of this?
No, not really. But I have listened to some of the obscure ones. And, yeah, it's... I just don't find them that talented, to be honest with you. They actually sound like they're off the red. Yeah. This is more about Morrison's Bloodline, or Bloodlines, and Ray Manzarek's Intelligence Connections.
Right.
So there is other stuff that we could go into, like a lot of this research that we've done, like the in episode 1 when we did the link between the first Summer of Love and the second Summer of Love. There's something deeper there to look into, because that's from our generation, isn't it, Chris?
Mm.
That would be, the second Summer of Love would be a good one to look into for us. So things in this are popping out that you think, right, I could look into that a little bit deeper. Mm. But I've got no real interest in their records or the music, as I've just said. So, thoughts, Chris. Were the Doors organic or a construct? This is pre-listening to all this stuff. You've not actually read through this part yet.
I don't know. It's funny, isn't it, that Oliver Stone made a film about the Doors. He always said that Jim Morrison, I think he said, didn't he say Jim Morrison was like his JFK? Or I think it's something along those lines.
Right.
So he made the Doors. I went to see that at the cinema, actually. I didn't really know anything about Doors. I thought the film was not that interesting. Bad wigs. A lot of bad wigs in it. Fake facial hair. But I don't really know anything. The only thing I know about the Doors is that his dad was the Admiral on, what is it?
Yeah.
Gulf of Tonkin.
Yeah, well, which, I mean, that is where my...
A little bit of conspiratorial information I've got
from Dave McGowan's book. And that was where I started, really. As we'll see, it goes a damn sight deeper than that. What Dave McGowan did there was scratch the surface and open up a whole world.
It looks very suspicious, because you don't... Like, if he was the famous rock star that you know, there's not that much footage of him singing, is there?
No.
I haven't seen much.
Like the Beatles. But even if you look for the Beatles, there's not that much for the Beatles proper footage either.
No.
From the second part of their lives, if you like.
They stopped playing live, didn't they?
Let's not talk about the Beatles anyway. But Oliver Stone's an interesting character as well, isn't he?
Yeah, because he's done JFK. He did Nixon.
Yeah.
He did one about 9/11, didn't he? Because I always thought he was like the conspiratorial director. And then he did one about, I think he did one about 9/11, if I'm right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that kind of, not even on a conspiracy level.
Yeah.
Literally about the building or something.
Mm.
So you've got to question, haven't you? You've got to question his...
Yeah, because his son's been coming out talking about certain things.
His son's a full-on... I mean, he's quite interested in his son. He talks quite well. But then also you've got to remember, thinking about it, Oliver Stone brought back... he brought to the forefront the whole Vietnam thing, didn't he?
Yes.
It worked quite what it was. Platoon.
Yeah.
I mean, after that, there was a series of Vietnam films showing how it probably was, where, you know, people didn't want to sign them, they got killed, and how horrible it was. There was like a string of them, weren't there, after that? Hamburger.
Dare I say a military documentary?
Well, also, was it... What I mean, on a PSYOP level, what were the reasons wanting people to start ranting about the Vietnam War again?
It's the same old trauma-based thing. That generation will have experienced all that, won't they?
Yeah, and through the parents, that's their kids watching it, I suppose.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So it's not that long after when you think. I think that film, I'm guessing, late 80s. It's not that long after it ended,
Oliver Stone's another one. His father was on active duty during France, which a lot of them were in World War II. And Oliver Stone also was in Vietnam in an elite unit with the 1st Cavalry Division participating in long-range reconnaissance patrols, just to carry on the military theme, Chris.
And also, interestingly, I've seen him interviewed, and he says he was a rich kid, so he actually volunteered. He didn't get signed up. I've actually heard him say that. I mean, who the fucking hell sign up for unless you got drag kicking and screaming?
Yeah. Some people do. Some people want to go in there. Some regret it. Some love it. But it's certainly interesting.
He's Charlie Sheen, I believe it is. He's portraying him in Platoon, like the green rookie going to Vietnam. I think it's based on Oliver Stone's experience in Vietnam. And like we said as well before, I think he's... He also directed Scarface, which, as everyone loves that film, although you watch it now and you're a bit old and you think, yeah. But
that in the first episode, didn't we, Scarface?
Yeah. And like I said then, I've always thought that was a cocaine promotion film.
Two of the Doors members, if you remember, we mentioned, were among the students in the Ravi Shankar's Kinara School of Music in LA. And they were Bobby Krieger and John Densmore. Interesting, Ray Manzarek Jr., who we're going to go into detail in this presentation, met guitarist as a teenager Robbie Krieger and drummer John Densmore at a transcendental meditation lecture and recruited them for the band. John Densmore said there wouldn't be, if you remember from episode 2, there wouldn't be any Doors without the Maharishi. And we mentioned about the Twilight Language and how hypnotic and throwing LSD and all the other stuff and the MKUltra operations that were running with LSD, is it any wonder that these kids, as they were then, turned into these band members? No, it isn't. Especially when you hear their backgrounds. I'm not saying all the band members, but certainly some of them. So Ray Manzarek Jr., and this really does follow on from Dave McGowan's work and Mark Devlin's work, and concerns the Doors, or two of the band members in particular, Jim Morrison and Ray Manzarek Jr. So before we get into Ray Manzarek Jr. and then Jim Morrison afterwards, I'm going to do a quick rundown of how and where the band came from. And there's a few... it's not an in-depth look, more of a bullet point assessment of the Doors and their origins. And there are a number of what I seem to see as discrepancies in stories, which can happen over time. You know, they do get agencies that write up their public relations and bios and stuff like this. And over time, they get tweaked and bits get forgotten. But there are some major discrepancies in the backgrounds. So the Doors were an American rock band formed in Los Angeles in 1965, with vocalist Jim Morrison, keyboardist Ray Manzarek, guitarist Robbie Krieger, and drummer John Densmore. The Doors began with a chance meeting. That's where I start having issues, Chris, that one.
Yeah.
Between acquaintances, so that in this part here where I pull this information from, they are saying that they knew each other, but yet still saying it was a chance meeting. If you know somebody, it's not a chance meeting, is it?
No.
It's not. You know, me and you, I can't come say to you, I've got this idea, Chris, and we, 2 years later we say, we had a chance meeting, me and my brother, and blah, blah. A chance meeting between acquaintances Jim Morrison and Ray Manzarek on Venice Beach in July 1965. They recognised each other. Well, they would do, they were acquaintances. As they both attended the UCLA School of Theatre, Film and Television. It states on that fantastic encyclopedia, Wikipedia, that the Doors were among the most influential and controversial rock acts of the 1960s, partly due to Morrison's lyrics and voice, along with his erratic stage persona. Now, I mean, it might have been controversial back then.
What was controversial about?
I don't know. I don't know what they did. What, they weren't like pulling the trolleys down and running around with the nads out, were they?
Not my controversial. Some Gary Boobs playing piano as Willie.
Yeah.
I mean, he did. When he sings, he kind of just talks, doesn't he, a lot of the time. Yeah. I don't know how this seemed controversial though.
No, I don't either. Influential, yeah, they probably, that's what they were there for, in my opinion. They were there to influence people, yeah, their behaviour and stuff like that. Yeah. No doubt about that. And Morrison's lyrics, it's weird how the whole band, where I've read of this, Morrison didn't write all the lyrics.
Right, and if you were to ask me point blank, I would say, yeah, he was a poet and he wrote all the lyrics.
Yeah, I would have said the same. I'd have said, yeah, he couldn't play an instrument. He wrote all the lyrics and they put
me, the charisma,
a bit like Elton John and Bernie Taupin. He came up with like hooks and things like that, and some of the words. But the Mekout is this messiah of writing. When I think a few of the band members wrote a few of the songs, the big songs like Light My Fire and stuff like that. I don't understand what his erratic stage persona. He were off his napper. He were a drug addict. He were an heroin addict.
But even that's dubious, Fatty, isn't it? Sure.
Well, I don't know. Everything's dubious at end of day, isn't it? End of day, they're going to a theatre, a UCLA School of Theatre, Film and Television.
Yeah.
And, you know, as we're going to see, a lot of these people are actors.
Yeah. His story reminds me of the Elvis story, just done in a short period of time.
With longer hair.
But, you know, he was a rebel and blah, 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 and he was different and all this lot. And then he got addicted to drugs and booze, and then he just killed himself.
You would say the Elvis story
in a short period of time.
You would say he were one of the first rock and rollers, wasn't he? You know, that burnt hot and then fizzled out and died. You know what I mean?
Yeah, candle that burnt out. But like I said, Elvis is the same. But and then you've got the same thing repeated with Amy Winehouse. But it's just what these pop singers do. They just get addicted to drugs and then just die
because they're so talented. They just explode.
Yeah. But you know yourself, and I'm sure most people know, you can't create anything off your tits. They've sold this this like image that you can get high and drink and, you know, it can make you really creative. It can't. Yeah. I don't think it can.
And artistic. It can make you artistic if you're off your napper.
I make sculptures and draw. I've seen some drawings when I've had a few shandies and they look shite. They portray all these characters, the Beatles, Rolling Stone, and they portray them like they were off the napper for 10 years, writing music and, you know, performing. And I don't know. I'm not convinced.
Well, again, we know that they've got these, and it's well-known fact that they've got these bands that work in these recording studios that, you know, they do the music. Mm. The producer makes sure the song sounds good. You know, and then they've got the pretty boys at the front who can play, but they're not as good as the studio guys. They're not as good as the producer. And that's it. The producer and the studio guys turd polish, don't they?
I would say that scenario has been fine-honed since then to now.
Yes. Yeah. Well, too right. Yeah. But when they make statements like, the group is widely regarded as an important figure of the era's counterculture, you know.
As soon as they say important, your ears pick up, don't they?
Yeah.
Why is it important? Is it important to me or are you telling me it's important?
Both. It's just another spell, isn't it? Mm. The Doors were one of the most successful bands during that time, and by 1972, the Doors had sold over 4 million albums. I mean, I don't know whether that's big numbers or not. Domestically, and 8 million singles. The band took its name, as we've said before, from Aldous Huxley's book, The Doors of Perception, hence the name of this episode of The Doors of Deception. Oh, that's the story. There are a few stories of how the Doors were formed, and there's a few discrepancies in that story. Like, did you know they were part of a band called Rick and the Ravens? More on them in a minute. One story of how the band was formed was from the official Raymond... I've got this from the official RaymondZerich.com website, and it says, it's July 1965, and Ray has graduated from UCLA. He's pondering what to do with the rest of his life and decides to walk down Venice Beach from his apartment on Fraser Avenue and think about what to do next. This part was written as if Ray was saying it. It was 1965 and it was the summer and school was finished. Now we had to do something. What are you going to do with your life? About 2 months later, sometime in July, sitting out on the beach here in Venice, who comes walking down the beach but Jim Morrison? I say, hey man, I thought you went to New York. I thought it was a chance meeting, he didn't even know him. He even knew he was going to New York. He says, no man, I decided to stay here. I've been writing some songs and some poems and living up on Dennis Jacobs' rooftop. So I said to him, this is Manzarek, let me hear some of them songs. Can you sing one of them for me? So he sat down on the beach and said, okay, here's one I got, Moonlight Drive. So that's quite a big hit of The Doors, Moonlight right. Drive. And when I heard the first lines, let's swim to the moon, let's climb through the tide, penetrate the evening that the city sleeps to hide. I said, wow, that's it. We need to start a rock and roll band together. And he said, Ray, that's exactly what I had in mind. And I said to him, you can come live with Dorothy and I, must have been his girlfriend, at our apartment up on Fraser while we work on the songs.
Right.
So what are we going to do? What are we going to call the band? Jim says, The Doors.
Done. Now, it could be me being pessimistic here, but it sounds like a romance building exercise.
It does a bit. It does a bit. And this is on The Doors Wikipedia page. So again, I'm using the Wikipedia page on this one. It says under the section History and Origins, July 1965 to August 66, The Doors began with a chance meeting between two acquaintances, which we said, Jim Morrison and Ray Manzarek, Venice Beach.
Who knew each other.
On Manzarek's Wikipedia page, it says, following his return to the United States, which is from the Army, if you remember, he re-enrolled in the UCLA's graduate film program in 1962, where he received a Master of Fine Arts degree in cinematography in 1965. During this period, he met his future wife, Dorothy Fujikawa, and undergraduate film student Jim Morrison. Acquaintance. Met him on Venice Beach. At the time, Manzarek was in a band called Rick and the Ravens. No mention of that. And his brothers, Rick and Jim. So bear in mind, Rick and the Ravens started up while he was probably in the army, which we're going to come to, but yeah. On Jim Morrison's Wikipedia, it says, in the middle of 1965, after graduating with a bachelor's degree from UCLA Film School, Morrison led a bohemian lifestyle in Venice Beach, living on the rooftop of a building inhabited by his UCLA classmate, Dennis Jacob. He wrote the lyrics of many of the early Doors songs that the Doors would later perform live and record on albums, such as Moonlight Drive and Hello, I Love You. According to fellow UCLA student, Ray Manzarek, he lived on canned beans and LSD for several months.
What, just like eating LSD?
Yeah. LSD on toast. Morrison and Manzarek were the first two members of the Doors, forming the group during the summer, or that summer. They had met months earlier as cinematography students. Hang on a minute. I thought they met on beach. Manzarek was impressed with Morrison's poetic lyrics, claiming that they were rock group material.
What, that although one Morrison, line you read him? You read him one line.
Really one line.
Pretty good, though, to be fair to him.
Yeah. Although Morrison was known as the lyricist of the group, Krieger also, bear in mind, this is on Jim Morrison's Wikipedia page. So Morrison was known as the lyricist of the group. Krieger also made lyrical contributions, writing or co-writing. When they said writing, it means he wrote the song.
Yeah,
not co-wrote, he wrote the song.
Co-writing.
Some of the group's biggest hits, including Light My Fire, Love Me Two Times, Love Her Madly, and Touch Me. Including, so there's more. Yeah? That's from there. Now, I also read that
some, and I might have it further on, but Rick Manzarek actually said that he didn't think much to his poems,
right,
and his songs, which we heard when with the Beatles stuff, didn't we?
Yeah.
Anyway, as I don't know if any, I mean probably Doors fans have heard of Rick and the Ravens. I certainly haven't heard of Rick and the Ravens. The Doors aren't a band I'd really listen to, so I'm not coming from it that I dislike them or like them. I'm coming from a point of interest. I haven't got a clouded vision of them. I've got no view on whether I like them or not. Anyway,
were
put
those,
it that
were
way.
Those guys all older than Jim Morrison?
No, they're all the same age, weren't they?
Not same age.
Roughly, yeah. In fact, the two guys that came on after Krieger and Densmore were, I think, they were younger. Rick and the Ravens, has anybody ever heard of them?
No.
It were an American surf rock and frat rock band founded in 1961. Rick and the Ravens was known as the forerunner to the Doors. Hang on a minute. I thought they met on the beach in Venice. According to Rick and the Ravens' wiki page, the band initially consisted of Rick Manzarek on guitar, Jim Manzarek on organ and harmonica, Patrick Stonier on saxophone, Roland Biskulus on bass, and Vince Thomas on drums. In 1962, Ray Manzarek, having moved to Los Angeles from Chicago, and presuming after he left the army, joined on vocals and occasional piano. We're going to cover Ray Manzarek's military background in more detail after this part, which is quite interesting. Rick and the Ravens performed on weekends for college crowds, mostly at UCLA Film School, and at a bar called Turkey Joint West on Santa Monica Boulevard, a British pub operated by the Santa Monica Soccer and Social Club. Their concert set list consisted of their own original songs. Bear in mind, Jim Morrison hadn't written any until 1965, and he wasn't even in the band here. Their own original songs, and mainly cover versions of blues standards. Rick and the Ravens also recorded three singles on Aura Records and a demo acetate containing six songs that were later re-recorded on Doors albums.
All right.
After getting out of the army in 1962, Ray Manzarek moved to Los Angeles and Chicago and joined the Rick and the Ravens, as I mentioned. Now, on the Rick and the Ravens page, it says, in an interview conducted by Rainer Modemann, who was the Doors biographer, a German biographer, Manzarek stated, the first song Jim Morrison performed with Rick and the Ravens was Richard Berry's Louie Louie cover version. Morrison was not officially part of the band at the time. Manzarek simply invited his former colleague, bear in mind it's not his band, on stage, much to everybody's surprise. Oh, Jim, just come on stage. It's my brother's band, but you can come on stage. Morrison was reportedly not prepared for this. His first public performance, and he sang himself hoarse. Obviously, he knew what words, just like that, Chris. Yeah. Morrison and Manzarek had met previously and found they shared a lot of musical and artistic interests. Later, Manzarek asked Morrison to join the band, and he accepted.
Right, so you got two different stories.
Yes.
Two totally different stories.
In 1965, Rick and the Ravens demo features Jim Morrison on vocals, so jump forward now, Ray Manzarek on piano and background vocals, John Densmore on drums, Rick Manzarek on guitar and Jim Manzarek on harmonica, and Patricia Pat Hansen as well in the band. And Jim and Rick were disappointed by the response the demo received after attempting to promote it. And they, along with Sullivan, were additionally not impressed with Morrison's songs. Subsequently, Rick and Jim Manzarek quit the band, their own band. I don't know how to do that. they started it, but they're quitting. Stating they felt it was going nowhere fast.
Right. Bloody hell. Gets weirder.
At Morrison's suggestion, the band changed its name to The Doors a month after they'd recorded the demo. Robbie Krieger joined on guitar in October 1965.
Basically went in there and took over the band, basically.
Well, him and Ray, by the sound of it.
But even even the fact that they were impressed by one line when he was on the beach, but then it was crap.
This has that old story of the Beatles and monkeys to it, to me. like they're like the Stones, the American Stones, Rolling Stones, and UCLA probably is a little bit like where Mick Jagger come from, London School of Economics. He came out of
just the creative arm, if you like.
Yes,
where
yeah,
it's films and music and photography, etc.
Yeah, it also sums up how deep. As we're going to come on when he's Ian Manzarek's story and see Jim's bloodlines and other information, where how deep the MK Ultra operation run via Tavistock and the intelligence services was in the post World War II era on the whole music scene, not just in America but over probably the world, and it was a constructed music scene leading up to and into the 60s and beyond. Like Chris mentioned, Elvis. He was probably one of the early ones to be constructed. The following is evidence that the hippie generation was a construct and that the planning was years in the making. At 3:30 a.m. on February 12, 1939, Raymond Daniel Manzarek was born. His father was Raymond Sr., who worked as a tool and die maker at the local International Harvester plant. His mother was Helen Colender Manzarek. Ray and Ellen would be blessed with two more sons over the coming years, James and Richard. Ray and his brothers would be third-generation Americans, and his grandparents coming to America from Europe in the late 1800s. Graduating from St. Rita of Kaskia High School in 1956, Manzarek went on to DePaul University in Chicago, where he played piano in his fraternity jazz band, the Better Fee Moo Combo. On Manzarek.com, it says he graduated from the University College of Commerce with a degree in economics in June 8, 1960. On Wikipedia, it says in late 1961, there's a few discrepancies with dates, but I'm not going to hold that against them, and it's Wikipedia. Manzarek briefly enrolled at the University of California in Los Angeles to study law, so the Los Angeles School of Law. On Wikipedia it says, unable to acclimatise to the curriculum, he transferred to the Department of Motion Pictures, Television and Radio as a graduate student before dropping out altogether after breaking up with a girlfriend. Now, on Manzarek.com, again, these are the discrepancies, Chris. After graduating from DePaul University in 1960, Manzarek enrolled in law school, which I've just said, at UCLA. After a few weeks of classes, Ray knew he wasn't cut out to be a lawyer and decided to enlist in the military. We'll hear another story later on that contradicts this, of how he joined up in the military. Ray then served in Thailand, it says, on his own website, and he's passed away now, so somebody's running his website. He actually says Laos that that we think he went to, and Okinawa, playing piano for his fellow troops wherever he could. And so the story seems, again, Chris, that the differentiating stories on his official website and on Wikipedia and on other blogs as well that I've read, just different stories altogether. And, so we'll move on and go into his military career. One thing is for sure, Ray Manzarek definitely joined the army in 1961. And he wasn't drafted, he volunteered, he joined of his own accord. And not only that, in his pre-Dawes era, future keyboard player Ray Manzarek Jr. was assigned to the highly selective Army Security Agency as a prospective intelligence analyst. I'll say that again. In 1961, Ray Manzarek Jr., keyboarder of the Dawes, was assigned to the highly selective Army Security Agency as a prospective Army intelligence analyst. Does that start ringing any of your MK Ultra alarm bells, Chris?
I would say so, yeah.
The ASA, or Army Security Agency, was under operational control of the Director of National Security Agency, located at Fort Meade in Maryland. The director at that time, the director is the highest ranking official of the NSA, which is a defense agency within the US Department of Defense. In 1960 to 1962, so the time when Manzarek would have gone in there, the director was Rear Admiral Lawrence Hugh Frost. Frost became director of the NSA in November 1960 with the rank of Vice Admiral. Now, I would hazard a guess that being Vice Admiral and director of the NSA, one of the most powerful men in the US military, he would probably have known Jim Morrison's dad, Rear Admiral George Morrison. And he would probably have known
Jim Morrison's great uncle as well. More on him in a bit. The fact that Mads Eric was put into a highly selective army security agency as a prospective intelligence analyst, as I said, has to set your MKUltra alarm bells ringing. It has to.
Mm.
That alone, what I found out there in just having a quick skit around, set my alarm bells off. But ironically, this Sheep Farm listener sent some information in. They didn't know we were looking into this. And it's a link from a personal website of someone called Britt Leach, an American guy. His website is brittleach.com. It's BRITTLEACH.com if you want to look it up. He wrote a blog called In the Army with Ray. I presume it was written around 2013, 2014, which he wrote as a tribute to Ray Manzarek Jr., who died in 2013. If you're watching this on YouTube, I'll put it on the screen now. Britt Leach says that he and Ray Manzarek Jr. joined the army together. Both were posted to Okinawa Island, Japan, in 1961 and 1962. In the blog, Britt writes that Ray told him he joined up because he wanted to study film and the art of the cinema. But Ray said he was conned into joining. Again, my MKUltra alarm bells are tingling. Manzarek says he'd had a few drinks in New York Times Square and just wandered into an army recruitment centre. The recruiting sergeant told him that the army would be a great place to study film by enlisting and requesting for an assignment to the Army Signal Corps, where they would give him a camera. So Ray Manzarek joined up there and then.
Right.
Ray was 22 years old and just got out of college or university. So we're talking 1961. That night is an interesting night, and I'd love to ask Ray Manzarek, but he's not with us anymore, who he went with, who were he out with. Did he think somebody spiked his drink? There's quite a lot of questions you could ask him there.
Well, and that story sounds like a romanticised version of having a few drinks in New York and I just walked in. It sounds like one of them stories.
Yeah, got too drunk and signed up just as Vietnam War were kicking off. And accidentally signed up into army. Yeah.
And why did he say he got conned as well?
Well, we're going to come to that. So if you remember, they said if he signed up to the Army Signal Corps, where they would give him a camera.
Right.
So what he thought he was signing up for, or this is what the story is, he was signing up to join a part of the army that would help him learn about film.
Right.
And technology of the time. No mention, though, that he wanted to play the keyboard. Apparently, the recruiting sergeant lied to him and didn't sign him up to the Army Signal Corps at all. Instead, Ray ended up on a Japanese island of Okinawa, on an army post called Torii Station, which is or was a big antenna field, where they used Elephant Cage Antenna, which is a worldwide network known collectively as Iron Horse, which can locate high-frequency communications anywhere on Earth. Bit of a difference.
Yeah.
The AN /FLR-9 is a type of very large circular woolen Weber antenna array built at 8 locations during the Cold War for HF and DF direction finding and high-priority targets. Both Ray Manzarek and Britt Leach were cleared to go to this army base by the Army Security Agency. Where's your camera, Ray? They first met on the island and talked at the NCO club over a Johnny Walker whiskey or two. They told each other their sad stories. Ray said he'd been conned into joining up by the sergeant. Britt says that he himself had to sign a security clearance document that probably bound him to security for life. However, according to Britt, Ray wouldn't sign the security clearance. Rebel. Ray told him he wouldn't sign it because he had Polish ancestry. And in the 60s, Poland was a communist country, and by signing the security agreement, or the secrecy agreement, he wouldn't be able to visit Poland in the future, as it was an enemy territory. Britt says the army had spent tens of thousands of dollars in getting Ray that security clearance. The FBI, the CIA, the Army Security Agency, All of these agencies have been involved in making sure Raymond Manzarek from Chicago will be a good little soldier and not give our secrets to the enemy, particularly Poland. This is on this blog. This is written on this blog.
You don't have to be Inspector Clouseau to realise Manzarek's got possibly some Polish ancestry, do you?
No, no. But so the CIA have looked into him.
Yeah, and he's worked it out.
I think they might have worked that bit out, don't you?
I worked it out by his name. I mean, you don't.
Yeah. And possibly they might have got him in the Army Security Agency for that very fact.
Yeah.
Because he can go into Poland and be
now,
Polish.
Again. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And now Ray wouldn't sign that security agency agreement or secrecy agreement, and it made the army very angry, Chris.
Right.
This is on his blog, this.
In 1960s America.
In the army.
Angry army would be quite as forgiving
so,
as
so now. What we've got to accept here is that in the army with Ray, in the 50s, 60s, they were forcing army personnel to have illicit drugs to see what it did to them. Yeah.
Without even being angry.
Without even being angry, yeah. And he wouldn't sign the security clearance document while he's on Okinawa Island.
He squeezed his knee and said, it's fine.
Yeah, it's fine, don't worry. Well, just listen to this next bit. Does this sound plausible to you, Chris?
No, not at all.
I'm sure it doesn't to
anybody. It's a fairy tale, isn't it?
Britt said in his blog, Ray didn't belong there either because Private First Class Raymond Manzarek did not look military. Any military, any time. This is how he's written it on this blog, so if it sounds odd when I'm reading it. He had very long blondish hair. Not rock and roll long, but long. So he's in the army. He's got long blondish hair, Chris. He had a moustache, a handlebar thing, that didn't speak of bicycles built for two or barbershop quartets, but rather of criminal motorcycle gangs or Cossacks. Now, bear in mind that he's... And I'll stop it, but bear in mind, he's growing this type of look in 1961, Chris.
Yeah. So he's preparing for something, isn't he? He's preparing his character. Yeah.
He's preparing his character.
Because I'm pretty sure in them days, as soon as you joined up, you got your head shaved. Or you got a buzz cut, I would imagine.
Well, we talked of Oliver Stone. One of the things that, I mean, that were about the Marines, but one of the things that they did where they shaved all their head off. Mm. Hair off, sorry.
And then you think Elvis, when he joined up, that famous footage of him getting his head shaved.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Ray Manzarek was wearing a defiant moustache, Britt says in his blog. Yet he was still on the island. So he wouldn't sign the secrecy thing, and he grew his hair long and grew a handlebar moustache.
Yeah. I mean, that it sounds like he's either... he's playing a part, or he's about to play a part, or he's high-ranking and can do whatever he wants.
Yeah. They put Private First Class Raymond Manzarek in what was called the casual platoon at Torrey Station, and talked to him frequently, heart to heart, trying to get him to change his mind. And it was while he was in that casual platoon that Ray grew his hair long and his moustache full Cossack.
All right, it's all right for in casual platoon.
Yeah. So they put him, the very fact that they put him in a special platoon and talk to him and give him heart to hearts frequently, that sounds very army-like, doesn't it, in 1960s?
Do you think that Brett guy's, do you think he's just writing an honest blog?
Well, it's funny you should ask that question, Chris, because it turns out that Britt Leach was, or is still, he's still alive, an actor, a Hollywood actor. On the IMDb database, which is an acronym for Internet Movie Database, which was bought by Amazon and Jeff Bezos in 1998 for $55 million, Britt Leach on IMDb says in his bio, he's chubby and an engaging character, and he's a character actor. Britt Leach was born on the 18th of July, our mum's birthday, 1938, in Galveston, Alabama. Leach was often cast as a no-nonsense police officer, scruffy everyday blue-collar working class types, and crude hillbillies in both movies and TV shows alike. Leach graduated from Birmingham Southern College in the mid-60s, He attended Northwestern University for a short spell, but eventually dropped out and briefly, says here, briefly, worked in Army Intelligence. Briefly.
Yeah, I smell a rat fire.
I'm smelling one already. I can hear that bell ringing, MK Ultra bell.
On IMDb, I read that Leach, it says, shared an apartment with Ray Manzarek. Didn't mention that in his blog, but it says it on IMDb.
Ah, right. Why wouldn't you mention that in your blog?
I don't know.
Well, he mentioned the armour, but he never mentioned knowing him after the armour.
Yeah, shared an apartment. Because you can't share an apartment in the army, can you?
No, you
otherwise, he'd have mentioned that in the army.
We're in the army together, yeah.
He graduated from Macaulay School, a boys' preparatory school, in 1956. And it was founded as an all-boys school. Macaulay became a military school in the wake of World War I, with students wearing uniforms and practicing military drills. He went to a military school that students wore military uniforms, participating in military drills. Then he went into Army Intelligence, and he shared an apartment with Manzarek. So, when I was doing Manzarek stuff, I thought, I'm going to have to look into this Britt Leach character. And I wasn't expecting what I found. I should be now, but I wasn't expecting him to be an actor. I didn't expect anything. I just thought it was somebody who was in the army with Ray.
Yeah. Well, I thought it was legitimate, to be fair.
Yeah. Are you thinking that now?
No.
No, neither am I. So it went into Army Intelligence, and here's a list of films and TV shows from 1970 to 1991 when he retired.
I was just trying to find a picture of him, actually.
I've got some pictures of him, but obviously you won't see them at this point. But Weird Science,
Phil.
The Great Outdoors, The Brady Bunch, Partridge Family, Bonanza, Tales from the Crypt, and Newhart, The Waltons, Father of the Bride, Quantum Leap, Murder, She Wrote, L.A. Law, Sent Elsewhere, Fame, Dukes of Hazzard, Hill Street Blues, Dallas, MASH, Wonder Woman, The Love Boat, Happy Days, Mission Impossible, said Bonanza. So these are just...
That is literally every main American TV show of the 70s up to the 80s and maybe even into the 90s.
That was a snapshot. That wasn't all of them.
I don't recognise his face, though, to be fair. I'm looking at him. No. He's a character actor, isn't he? He's one of those background actors that just dibs in and out, I suppose. Mm.
But do these people have to be, Chris? You know, do these people have to be? If you're going to have somebody who's undercover, the best way to do it is somebody who's undercover.
And
I suppose.
I mean, was his reward the fact that he kept working? Because character actors are often, you know... struggling for work. He's clearly worked solidly since, you know, actors, you know, are always struggling for work. He's clearly worked solidly since the 50s, 60s, I reckon, though.
Yeah, and if you're watching this now, we'll be putting pictures up there showing this guy. We could be wrong, but when you go through this work and you start seeing all these characters, part of military intelligence, that... bits of story missing here and there, and then you find something else and all that. And you've got to ask the question, is Britt Leach, interesting name, Leach, an Operation Mockingbird operative?
Well, there is also the chance that he was just in the military with him, and they've asked him to write that book. That could be, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
that
could be.
There's a chance of that, isn't there?
Or it could be, he's been in the military with him, and they've asked him to write that blog. He don't know who's asking him. And he's been used all his life, because a lot of these Operation Mockingbird people didn't know they were being used.
That's what I mean.
Yeah. I think on this island, there were probably real characters, as in real army personnel, and then they were probably mingling, these people were finessing their characters and lying to people who they befriended.
Mm. Yeah, that's what I mean.
Because that's what an intelligence agent would do, wouldn't it? Mm. So he might be writing something honest, thinking this is what this was about, not realising that we were a total setup, and this casual platoon, we didn't write any more about this casual platoon, was actually a platoon of infiltrators that we were going to use for various different tasks. Hmm. And it sounds like, possibly, that this casual platoon, that they talked to him frequently, art to art, trying to get him to change his mind, could have been some kind of MK Ultra, mind control, training, whatever, ops type of... on a remote island in Japan, on a listening base. Anyway, because he wouldn't sign this secrecy document, Manzarek was shipped out to Laos
Not Vietnam, Laos. The army wanted to help Ray change his mind on the matter of his security clearance. This is what he's writing again. There's a full blog. I haven't written the full blog out, but this is the full blog. And thought the jungles of Laos would be helpful in that regard and would concentrate his mind nicely. It didn't work, and Ray was released from the army after being in Laos for a short time. But it also said Manzarek grew what he described as herbs in Laos. He then smuggled it back to the US after he got discharged. No explanation as to what the drug was, cannabis or poppy stroke heroin, that he brought back into America. So he's writing to him back to the at the base. So let's just say this Brit guy is a real character and he's honest and he's writing what's happened. It sounds like they're sheep dipping somebody, this Ray Manzarek, and giving him, like you said, a persona, rechanging his style, if you like. That nonsense about him just getting drunk one day and walking into a recruitment place in New York just sounds like nonsense, doesn't it?
Fairy tale. Yeah.
Apparently, pre-army, Ray had already enrolled in University of California in Los Angeles, and he apparently unable to acclimatise to the curriculum, so he transferred to the Department of Motion Pictures, Television, Radio as a graduate student before dropping out altogether. It was then that he enlisted in the Army Signal Corps as a camera operator, and he was instead assigned to the highly selective Army Security Agency. So he were already at university, California University, which is, and he went to another university as well, which I'm probably going to go into his background a little bit deeper. And he'd been to university already, so he could acclimatise to the curriculum. He wouldn't have dropped out. And that, again, like we saw in episode 2, I think it was, where we showed that professor was recruiting people from a small university for MK Ultra. This is what was happening in the 50s and 60s. People were getting recruited. And you imagine if you're told, this is what plans we've got for you, Ray. You're going to join a band and you're going to be in one of the most famous bands in the world.
Mm. What, part of an army guy? Yeah. It's a secret operation.
Yeah. Ray told Brit he didn't like the army. And I'm not sure about this from my memory. If you were at college or university, I don't know if in the 1960s, you couldn't be drafted, I don't think. You escaped the draft if you were at university.
Right.
I might be wrong there. This was in the US. So why did he drop out and go to a recruitment office if he was already in university? But anyway, I mean, maybe he wanted to go and fight. I don't know. But he didn't fight. He didn't want to go and fight. He wanted to be a camera operator. It sounds to me like if he did go to Laos and that story about transporting herbs back, it's a really good mix with the hippie type thing that he became, innit? Following his return to the US, Manzarek enrolled again in UCLA's graduate film program in 1962, where he received a Master of Fine Arts degree in cinematography in 1965. So he'd also been at that university pre going into the army, and he'd done a law graduate, and he dropped out of that as well, law graduate course. And So he's received a fine arts degree in cinematography in 1965. Now, bear in mind, this is where he met Jim Morrison, yeah? Mm. During this period, he met his future wife, an unknown undergraduate film student named Jim Morrison. In the blog piece, Britt says that, I don't know how Ray found the money to go to film school, think I do, Britt, at UCLA, where he met Dorothy Fujikawa, the love of his life, and Jim Morrison, and they came up with The Doors. And that itself is a story on its own, Chris.
Mm.
That's like, I invented this Microsoft in my garage story.
Yeah.
The story goes, right, that after The Doors finished, and I've got several different stories, so I'll probably go into this in anyway. This Ray Manzarek was on the beach in California, and Jim Morrison walked past him. And he said, I thought you'd gone back to wherever Jim Morrison came from. And he said, no, I decided to stay. I'm crashing at somebody's house, but I've wrote these songs. He said, well, sing me one of them. So he sang one of them and it won at Famous Songs. And he said, oh, that's what we need to do, start a band up. I'll go into that in more detail.
How old are they at this point, Fat?
Well, they were 22 in 1961 when this Rayman's Eric, so...
No, because anyone who's in a band, they've been playing an instrument since they were a teenager, sure.
Well, I think he has. I think he did play piano, and he was into jazz music and stuff like that, was Rayman's Eric. I think there's no doubt that some of these kids are into music, and some of them have played instruments. They're just not very good.
Yeah, well, I mean, the Doors, the one thing I do know about the Doors is they're famous for that organ, aren't they?
Yes, and he played that organ.
That would be him, yeah.
There's a few questions arise from this blog, but it could also be building in some sort of narrative. But I think that Ray Manzarek seems to have been acting while he was in the army. That's the bit that I get out of that he was sort of playing a part. What does Mark call them? Lifetime actors.
Well, it seems like almost like Secret Service-y kind of character.
Mm. Mm.
Undercover.
Yeah. Undercover type thing. But yeah. This on its own, to me, is an incredible story to believe and seems to be like some sort of CIA military sheep dipping exercises with MK Ultra thrown in all in one.
Mm.
But when we view the whole Door story, we begin to see a construct and an MK Ultra operation. And I keep calling them Manchurian candidates because I think we keep looking at Manchurian candidates as like assassins that physically kill people. But imagine a Manchurian candidate assassin that delivers music to change people's minds. And they're sent out to do these things like sleeper cells that we all adore and like and worship and, you know, like a lot of these people that we talk about, Chris, in these episodes, you know, some of the people like the comic writers that you liked and actors and directors and musicians that you look at and you think, you know, they were my heroes, some of these people.
Yeah.
And now you view them totally differently. And,
well, have I ever got links or they're being used one way or the other?
Mm. Mm. And although not directly linked by blood, and I'll put a little caveat in there, although they could be, and I'm on about the Doors here, to the Huxley family, there are connections to the Tavistock operations in the 60s that controlled the music industry. And these were written about in the Committee of 300 book by John Coleman and via people like Mark Williams, and I keep mentioning Mark Devlin's research and Dave McGowan's research, of which the Huxleys were involved directly and generationally. Mm-hmm. Mark Devlin covers this type of information in his trilogy of books, Musical Truths, Volume 1 to 3, and Mike Williams also covers it in his Beatles work, Paul is Dead research. Dave McGowan wrote about Morrison in his famous book, Weird Scenes Inside the Canyon, Laurel Canyon Covert Ops and the Dark Heart of the Hippie Dream. It's the right title, that. McGowan told us that Morrison's father was, in fact, Rear Admiral George Stephen Morrison of the United States Navy. And it's interesting, when you go on his Wikipedia page, he actually says that he sort of denounces the fact that he was involved in the Gulf of Tonkin, and the ship was this such and such ship, and that's the one that got attacked. But what they also say is that he couldn't have been involved because Rear Admiral George Morrison was running the whole operation with all the ships.
All right.
So it's even bigger than you think.
He's even more involved.
He's even more involved than not being involved, because he wasn't controlling that ship that got attacked. He probably sent that ship to get pretendedly attacked. Admiral Morrison was the commander of the United States Naval Forces during the Gulf of Tonkin. So he was commander of the naval forces, not the ship.
The whole shenanigans, basically.
Yes, yes.
And it's funny, we've mentioned this before, fact that all most wars are started with some kind of naval incident.
Yes, yeah. But we all run it on naval law, aren't we, I suppose? Yeah. So
it's just odd.
Even, yeah. That's linked to water. Even that Russian pipeline and the Caspian Sea was the first bit where
Falkland Islands
going into Crimea. Yeah, Falkland Islands,
Yeah, everything, the Bismarck in World War II and Lusitania and all this other stuff.
According to Nick Collison's book, World War One was something to do with Churchill on a boat going over and facing off against the German guy, peacekeeper of Europe.
Yeah.
All naval linked for some reason.
Interesting, the Gulf of Tonkin incident was August 4th, 1964, less than a year before the Doors formed. And there's a picture of Jim Morrison on the boat that his father were on, less than a year before they formed the Doors, with short hair, military-style haircut.
Which,
quite a famous picture from Dave McGowan's book, which sparked the escalation of the American involvement in Vietnam, and which is shown to have been an orchestrated false flag event. I don't think that's arguable
I think it's even proven now. I think it's admitted, should I say.
Yeah. And Aldous Huxley was part of, or even possibly the leader of Tavistock, planning for the 60s revolution that the Doors took part in. And it's not, there can't be a coincidence that they called themselves after Aldous Huxley.
I think they actually openly admitted it.
But you've got Aldous Huxley, who was part of the start of this counterculture type thing via Tavistock, that started all these beat generation and all this other stuff.
You've literally got Jim Morrison promoting that book.
Yes.
Back promoting it, should you say.
Yeah, yeah. But there's also another interesting link, now for some quite left field, that brings us all the way back to the Aldous Huxley links again. Interestingly, Lee Harvey Oswald was also working at a Japanese base. In the late 50s, Oswald's training was in secret radar operations similar to Manzarek's, which required a security clearance. In May 1957, a document stated that Oswald was granted final clearance to handle classified material up to and including confidential, after a careful check of local records had disclosed no derogatory data. He was given the military occupational speciality of aviation electronics operator. In 1959, this is an interesting story, so I don't know if you've heard of this guy. I never heard of him, Chris. Oswald met future author Kerry Wendell Thornley, who was also in the Marine Corps. He is known as the co-founder, along with his childhood friend Greg Hill, of Discordianism, a kind of cult. Thornley was also known as Omar Khayyam Ravenhurst, or simple Lord Omar. Raised as a Mormon, Kerry Wendell Thornley shifted his ideological focus frequently in rivalry with any serious countercultural figures of the 1960s. I mean, that alone sounds like some kind of intelligence operation, like a counterculture operation.
Yeah.
Among the subjects he closely scrutinised throughout his life were atheism, anarchism, objectivism, neo-paganism, Krishna, Buddhism, and the mimetic inheritor of Discordianism. And, listen to this one, the Church of the Subgenius. Can you remember that, Chris?
No, go on. Sorry, run it by me.
Church of Subgenius is where that Bob character comes from.
Ah, right. Right.
Where they pray to this salesman called Bob.
Right.
yeah. Anyway, but this guy sounds like he's going against the counterculture, right? But anyway, another story is that. This is what interests me. Post-Marine Corps, Kerry Wendell Thornley attended Robert Lefevre's Freedom School. Robert Lefevre served as an officer in the Education Orientation Division of the Army Air Corps in 1945. Soon after World War II, he and his wife went on a cross-country lecture tour in a pilgrimage for world peace. Their peace tour was bankrolled by the Falcon Lair Foundation, a non-profit group interested in religion, philosophy and government, whose headquarters were at the Falcon Lair Mansion, Beverly Hills, California. The estate was built in 1925 by actor Rudolf Valentino, who named it Falcon Lair after his unproduced film, The Hooded Falcon. Secret wires were found in the house and seances were held by spiritualists after Valentino had died. Thank you.
happier.